I wasn't expecting that.
Jamie Lawson wasn't expecting that. But what I was expecting was for my guest to join me. And sitting next to me, I've got Michael Carrigan from Debenhams Otterway. Welcome to Radio Verulam, Michael.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Now, would you like to tell us, just to open, a little bit about yourself?
Yes, well, I work at the local firm Debenhams Otterway. I specialise in employment law, and that's here what I'm here to talk about today.
Which is an extremely hot topic, of course.
Yes.
There's a lot happening in the area. So, quickly then, bullet points of what you're going to cover.
Yes, yeah, so basically it's concentrating on the risks that are faced particularly by small employers. And when I say small employers, I'm really talking about very small employers. So having one or two employees, focusing on areas like having a nanny, gardeners,
right.
housekeepers. So people may not consider themselves to be employers, but they are, and it's important that they meet the minimum obligations towards their members of staff.
And that must be a high percentage of numbers involved in that sort of thing, because thousands
yes.
of people have nannies and gardeners and the
yes.
like. And
yes, exactly, and the risks, I think, are enhanced there, because they may not think that the laws apply to them, but whether you have one or a thousand employees,
mm-hmm.
you must meet the minimum requirements.
Okay, so I take an au pair, for example, or a
yes.
nanny. What's the first thing I have to do?
Well, the dangers, I think, have been highlighted this week in particular. There's been a news coverage from the Department of Work and Pensions, and it highlights the fact that it was around auto-enrolment, and what it's basically saying is that you need to fulfil minimum requirements, and there they were focusing on the auto-enrolment,
mm-hmm.
And the fact there that there could be fines if you didn't do what you're supposed to do, and if you don't register yourself with DWP, fines are up to £400. So
right.
it's important to start off on the right foot. The first thing that you need to do is you need to ensure that there's a clear agreement between the parties, and it's helpful to have a contract of employment in place. Even if there's an oral agreement between the parties, it's important that there's a core term set out very clearly in writing between the parties. So that would cover things like working hours, place of work, things like that, just to ensure that there is some certainty there with regards to the employment relationship.
And is there a sort of standard document that you can get hold of that save you having to worry about
yes.
What should I put in it, or for example?
Yes, there are standard documents, but because of the sort of intricacies of different employment relationships, it's important that that's tailored to meet the individual requirements. So obviously, if you come and see a solicitor such as myself,
mm-hmm.
We'll be able to help you out with that, but it just needs to be certain in terms of giving the employee the information they need to understand the employment relationship.
Okay, so that is the thing you're doing now. You're taking in people who are with small numbers of employees, and
yes.
you're doing a contract for them.
Yes, and really just explaining to them that we can help them out, put in place an agreement that reflects what they've agreed with the employee. It really just starts the relationship off on the right foot, and it helps that to solve any disputes by there being clear terms between the parties as to what's been agreed.
Okay.
I mean, that contract would also cover things such as the making sure they're compliant with the national minimum wage, for example.
Right.
So
yes.
If you employed anyone over the age of 21, there's a fixed rate now of £6.70 that the pay must not fall below. It also covers things like rest breaks. So on a daily, weekly basis, there's a maximum working week of sort of 48 hours, for example.
Right.
It also covers things like paid holiday, which
mm-hmm.
again is something that people may not appreciate. If they employ somebody, they have to give them a minimum amount of paid holiday. So for
Whoa.
Someone who's employed on a full-time basis, that would be 28 days, including bank holidays.
Right.
So again, that may be something that people don't appreciate, and that may be a hidden cost to the employment relationship.
Okay, just quickly then, the contract that you'll get,
yes,
both parties sign it, presumably. Does it have to be witnessed?
No, it doesn't have to be witnessed, but it would be helpful for both parties to keep a copy of the document. So we'd normally
mm-hmm.
suggest that there be two copies, both parties sign original copies and keep an original copy themselves.
Okay, and then things that you would normally get, say, if you were in major employment, a major employer,
yes.
for example, something like sick pay, how's that handled?
Well, again, sick pay is something that even if you only have one employee, there is minimum entitlements there under the statutory sick pay rules. So from the fourth day of absence, that kicks in, and it can go up to a maximum of 28 weeks.
Wow.
So, I mean, larger employers may offer more enhanced terms, so they may offer more favourable rates above the fixed statutory
mm-hmm.
sick pay rules, but it can't fall below the statutory sick pay.
Okay. It's starting to sound rather complicated just to employ a single person.
And potentially costly as well. If you don't think about these things from the outset, you have to factor that into the decision to take somebody on.
Okay, we'll have a 2-minute break whilst I digest that and worry about my person I've just signed on. And I am only human, well, the killers are anyway. Human human matters, of course, because we're very, very deeply into employment law for companies or persons employing not many people, putting it that way. And as I said at the intro, I've got Michael from Debenhams Ottaway. Welcome back, Michael.
Thank you. You
enjoy the music, I hope?
Yeah, very good.
Yes, okay. Right, well, we've got established so far. I'm going to take this person into my employment. I need a contract, otherwise I'm on thin ice, so to speak. And just quickly go over again what we needed in the contract.
So we needed in there setting out the working hours, place of work, also setting out break periods. So really just dealing with all the essential core terms of the employment.
Right. Now, you mentioned I have to pay a minimum wage.
Yes.
How does this differ from living wage? I keep hearing these sums.
Yes, well, this is something that's being proposed to come in the future. And it's above the national minimum wage rate. And in the past, it's been voluntary, and I think a lot of larger organisations have actually signed up to it already.
Right.
But it's not actually the national minimum wage as yet, and that's yet to be decided as to when that may come in or not.
So if I pay the minimum or more, I'm on safe ground there.
Exactly. And I mean, something like the national minimum wage, it can be complicated with things such as live-in workers, which again is something you need to be careful of. So things like carers.
Yes.
You may have someone who needs to sleep on the premises and be on call.
Yes.
So you may have an issue there if you have someone who's employed, for example, working 8 hours a day at the national minimum wage rate. If they're then on call in the night for, say, a further 8 hours, is that classified as working time? So if it is, then obviously they're working 16 hours, and that then means that they fall below the national minimum wage rates.
Oh,
so that's quite a technical area, and again, something that employers need to be aware of.
Well, I suppose that if you are employing someone of that nature, I mean, it has to be given serious consideration. If you've got people living in and expected to get up in the middle of the night,
exactly,
and maybe drive somebody hospital treatments or whatever like that.
Yes.
A lot more regulation there that needs considering.
Definitely.
I'm a bit surprised that, you know, I've got this one person working for me. I have to give them a holiday.
Yes, some people can be surprised by that. I think something else which may surprise them, let's use the example of maternity pay and maternity leave. So let's use the example of a nanny. You take someone on board to a female to work as a nanny for you. And what happens then if she, after, say, a period of a year working for you, then decides that she wants to have children of her own, and she falls pregnant, she then wants to take a period of up to 12 months maternity leave. There's also potential there to pay her statutory maternity pay during that period also. So there are lots of things to think about.
And they apply even so on a small, it's a single person employment?
Yes, so there are eligibility requirements, which is probably too detailed to go into at this moment, but the starting point is that, yes, they may be entitled to these benefits, and employers need to be aware.
Gosh. Now, if I give them somebody accommodation, how is that handled in terms of, like, a payment in lieu?
This, again, is quite a complicated area. So some employers I have come across in the past situations where they basically reduce the wage to a level below national minimum wage rate on the basis that they are providing free accommodation. And this is something which the government are keen to protect against, because it is open for exploitation. So there are actually set amounts that you can deduct from someone's wage in relation to accommodation being provided, just to make sure that they're not being exploited.
Of course.
And that's I can't recall the precise figure, but it's at quite a low level, something like, I think, £6 or £7 per day or something. I can't recall the exact figures, but it is very low, and again, that's an area that employers could get caught out on.
And you mentioned sick pay and maternity pay apply. Are they at the normal employment rates or what?
No, again, there are fixed statutory rates which are set and changed sometimes annually, sometimes less frequently. So there are set amounts that will apply. Again, it's dependent on your earnings, and it may fall below the set amount depending on your level of earnings.
Okay. I suppose what's happened is that in the past, employees have been completely exploited.
Exactly.
And in a way, it almost sounds now from me as employing somebody like, my goodness, I'm being the one that's penalised in some ways now. But and again, not truly so, if it's worked out properly.
Well, exactly. And it may place sort of an unreasonably high burden on very small employers, but it is necessary, I suppose, to ensure that people are being treated fairly and not exploited in the workplace.
Okay. Do these things change? I mean, I employ one person, 10 people, the company gets successful, 100 people, 1,000 people. Is there a change? Are the breakpoints of how the regulation may change?
No, in terms of things like national minimum wage, that will apply to all of your employees individually, regardless of the actual numbers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And same for holiday breaks, working hours, etc.?
Yes, yes. They would all apply equally across your employee workforce.
And what about if you want somebody to work peculiar hours? You know, like a shift 1 week early, and if you say you're employing three people and you want a three shift pattern, and
there can be differences in terms of nighttime working. Again, there are regulations there in terms of the health and safety aspects of that, just to make sure, particularly if people are doing late night monotonous work, there can be slight changes in the rest breaks and periods that are provided for. Again, something I thought that would be interesting to flag up as well is around just establishing the actual right to work in the UK, which again is something which is overlooked. So at the start of the employer relationship, just making sure they are legally entitled to work here, there are fines of up to £20,000 per employee if you get that wrong. So it's important to check passports, if there's any visas, to make sure that those are in date, and there are sort of external third parties that you can use to check that those are valid, because there's an increasing amount of fraud in relation to visas to get people the right to work here.
Yes, so that is becoming a very, very hot issue as well, isn't it?
Yes.
And even renting out accommodation, you're going to have to check out people's validity for that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just important, particularly if you're letting this person potentially into your home, there's safety issues there as well, just to make sure that they are who they say they are, and that they are legally entitled to work here. Also, again, employer's liability insurance. This may not be something that you think about immediately, but you know, if somebody is coming into your home to work for you, it's important that you protect yourself against the risk of them suffering any illness or injury.
They trip over and smash their head on the wall.
Exactly, if you have some sort of exposed electrical cables and they electrocute themselves, are you going to be protected against the risk of that?
Yeah. Well.
I'm putting everyone off.
Very nearly, yes. Just then, quickly to finish, a quick summary then of, we covered quite a few points there, the real bullet points, if you may.
So the key thing is, if you have any concerns, if you're starting off an employment relationship with somebody, or if you have an existing relationship and you have any concerns, that it's important to take detailed legal advice, and we'd be able to assist you with that. There are, as we've discussed today and touched upon, a number of issues that you need to consider, and it's important that you do that at the right moment, so you don't expose yourself to risks.
Mm-hmm. Okay. People come to you, is it a fixed rate, or how's charging affected?
Well, it depends on the nature of the work we're undertaking, but we would always give an estimate before we undertake any work, and to make sure we keep people updated as to the costs, and make sure that it's try and keep it proportionate to the issues involved.
Okay, and that's Debenhams Ottaway. If anyone is interested following up, make contact.
Yes, certainly.
To you, Michael.Kerrigan, hopefully.
MK@debenhamsottaway.co.uk.
Excellent. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in, Michael.
Thank you for having me. It's been
very interesting, in fact, and I'm not going to employ anyone now, I'm sure.
Thank you.